You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Introducing Anthroposophical Medicine. This is Lecture 8, given in Dornach on March 28, 1920. What we refer to by saying ether body, astral body, and so on, terms we must use to abbreviate or simplify our ideas, can definitely be traced to how they are imprinted, in a certain sense, in physical processes. It's just that today we are not inclined to correctly associate what is expressed through physical processes with the spiritual foundation of existence. We absolutely must make these associations, however, in order to spiritualize our methods of thinking and observation in the field of medicine. For example, we must investigate how the interplay between what we call the etheric and physical bodies takes place. You know that this interplay takes place within the human being, and we spoke yesterday of one aspect of it, an irregularity that can develop with regard to how the astral body affects it. This same interplay also takes place outside, however, in nature, external to the human being. If you follow this thought through to the end, you will have a thorough insight into the human being's connection to non-human nature. When you look into nature, you are surrounded by all the individual species of plants. Let's focus on plants for today. And you become aware of this flora through various senses. If you do this, you can get at least an inkling of the interaction that takes place, first of all between this flora and the Earth's entire atmosphere, and second, between the plants and the planetary or astral realm that lies outside this earthly sphere. We might say that when we consider the Earth's flora, if this is the Earth's surface, the plants point us in the direction of the atmosphere and the astral or starry realm. And there's a drawing. They point to the extra-telluric principle. Even without going into the esoteric aspects, we can sense the living interaction taking place out there between the phenomenon of plants bursting into flowers and fruits and influences coming from the great expanses of the universe. Next, let us turn away from all this and direct our thoughts inward, into ourselves. This view requires a little help from intuition, but as I have already said, absolutely nothing works in medicine without intuition. If we redirect our thoughts away from the outer world and into ourselves, we discover a certain relationship to what is outside. Since we must realize that in the plant world, the etheric aspect is intimately connected to the physical, we must also sense that there is a certain relationship between the etheric-physical connection in the plant world and their connection within the human being. It is important to acknowledge what it is that enables us to speak outwardly and concretely about this relationship between the etheric and the physical. Initially, we can say quite abstractly that because it opens upward, the etheric factor is closer to the astral than to the physical. We will also have to realize that the etheric does have some kind of connection to the physical. We will have to examine this dual relationship of the etheric to the physical on the one hand, and the astral on the other. and we will have to look for some way of being guided into this relationship. I would now like to show you as concretely as possible how this can happen. Let us imagine that you are walking down an avenue that is lined with flowering linden trees. As you walk along, try to be very aware of passing through their scent, and be aware, too, that a process is taking place between that aroma and the nerve-like network spreading throughout your organs of smell. If you pay attention to this process, you become aware of the inner factor that is capable of perceiving smell. This factor is shooting upward to meet the linden scent. You must realize that in the process taking place here, an inner element comes forth to meet an outer one, and that these two elements somehow bring a process to completion because of the inner relationship between them. Your actual perception of the scent internalizes an external element dispersed by the scent of the flowering trees, an element that is undoubtedly based on how the plants interact with their entire extra-earthly environment and open themselves up to it. Because you perceive, a force present within you must be working from the etheric body into the astral body, because otherwise you would be unable to perceive, and the whole process would take place only on the level of life functions. In perceiving smell, the very process itself is evidence of the astral body's involvement. But while this relationship to the outer world is being disclosed, you also realize that the development of the sweetish scent given off by the linden blossoms is somehow related to, or is the opposite pole of, what is going on in your organs of smell. In fact, in the linden blossom's pervasive scent, we recognize the interaction of the etheric element in the plant with the surrounding element, the astral element that pervades universal space. As the perceptive process is played out, we participate in the aspect of the plant world that is related to the extra-telluric astral element. Now, let us choose any taste, just to have an example that relates to the previous one. A similar process occurs when we taste the flavor of licorice or sweet grapes. But in this case, the process takes place in your organs of taste as opposed to our organs of in our organs of taste as opposed to our organs of smell. You know how closely related our organs of taste and smell are, so you will immediately have some idea of how closely the processes of tasting and smelling are related with regard to the whole course of natural events. You must also be clear, however, that tasting is a much more organic and inward process than smelling. Smelling takes place closer to the surface and participates in processes of the non-human outer world that dissipate or are dispersed in space. This is not the case with tasting. Through tasting, you discover certain properties that necessarily lie within substances, and that must, therefore, be bound up with the substantial element itself. Through tasting, more than through smelling, you discover the internal character of substances, in this case of plant substances, and you simply need a bit of help from your intuition to realize that everything that has to do with solidification in plants, with organic solidification, is revealed or disclosed by tasting what is in the plant. However, the plant kingdom resists becoming solid, as is demonstrated by the substances that cause plants to become aromatic. You will not be able to doubt that the process of tasting is related to the etheric's connection to the physical. Now, take smelling and tasting together. Surrounded by plant odors and taste, you are in the midst of the etheric's dual connection to the astral and the physical. You go right into the etheric, or rather into its imprint, when you pay attention to smelling and tasting. The seat of smelling and tasting in the human being is a revelation within the physical world of the etheric's connection to the astral and the physical. In some respects, we remain on the surface of the human being when we investigate the processes of smelling and tasting. But you see, the important point today is that in our efforts to fructify real science, we finally go beyond the abstract and the mystical and move on to concretely grasp the spirit. What good does it do if people talk on and on about grasping the divine element in the human being, if they understand this divine element as an abstract divinity at best? This way of looking at things becomes fruitful only when we are able to delve into concrete phenomena. If we consider the internalization of outer processes in this concrete sense. For example, while we are engaged in smelling and tasting, we must consider both the outer living etheric element that is related to the human being and its internalization. We need to see what is perhaps the crudest of our upper sensory processes as a direct internalization of outer processes. It is so very important for our times to move beyond the merely abstract and mystical. You will also realize now that everything in nature is in a constant state of transition to another form. Each process in nature tends to move on to another, to metamorphose into a different one. If you take what we have just said about smelling lying closer to the surface, see drawing below, and there's a drawing, and tasting taking place deeper within the human being and related to plants, you find that these processes take place in the etheric element inasmuch as it opens up toward the astral or solidifies into the physical. That is, it either moves outward, dispersing and becoming aromatic, or, in the case of tasting, it refrains from becoming aromatic, internalizing the outer tendency toward solidification. In a certain respect, the outer and the inner merge when we focus on smelling and tasting. In nature, however, any given process always leads into a different one. Let us consider the aromatic aspect of the plant, that is, everything that allows the plant to avoid becoming solid by giving off its plant essence, extending its spirituality, pardon the lay expression, into the atmosphere, so that the atmosphere contains something of the plant's essence in the form of fragrance. Ghostly replicas of plants are present in what we smell out in the world. Consider what is actually happening in the external world when a plant gives off its ghostly fragrance, when it does not allow itself to become a totally solid plant, when its flowers emit a substance that wants to become a flower but refrains from doing so and persists in a dispersed state. This is nothing other than a restrained combustion process. If you imagine the metamorphosed extension of the process of becoming aromatic, you will have to think of it as a restrained combustion process. You see combustion and the plant's aromatic process and recognize them as two metamorphoses of a common entity. I might say that becoming aromatic is the process of combustion on a different level. Let us look at the aspect of the plant that causes flavor and therefore lies deeper within the plant. Rather than sending its vegetative formative force out into the environment in ghost-like form, the plant holds it together and uses it to develop internal forms. Because you participate in this internal formative process when you taste, you arrive at a process that parallels the plant's solidification on a lower level. On this other level, however, it is a metamorphosis in the direction of becoming salt-like, inasmuch as plants do this, because we are still talking about the plant world here. And then it refers back to the drawing. Consider this strange metamorphosis in the plant. On the one hand, you see the upward-directed process of becoming aromatic, which is a restrained combustion in some respects. It can lead to the beginnings of combustion, because the activities involved in flowering are simply combustion processes that are incorporated into the plant. Down below, on the other hand, you have solidification, the process of becoming salt-like. What you taste in a plant is a restrained salt formation. But when salts are actually incorporated into the plant, when you find salts within the plant itself, these plant salts have gone beyond the process of plant formation. The plant has imprinted its own ghostly replica on its fundamental nature. Here we recognize the rationale behind a remedy. In a certain sense, we begin to see light dawning within the plant world because we are able to see into what is going on there. I must repeatedly emphasize the importance of this concrete way of seeing. In order to move on, you must simply recall that wherever possible and purely for higher opportunistic reasons, I will be linking what we are discussing to the common parlance of today, so that you will be in a position to bridge the gap between external science and what spiritual science has to offer. I could also characterize what I am going to explain in the next few sentences in more spiritual scientific terms, but my intention is to forge a link to modern, conventional, scientific ideas that are already available. The physiologists of today speak of matters that are accessible to them, but not necessarily to spiritual scientists, who do not need to study anatomy in the same way. Nonetheless, let us make the connection with conventional scientific ideas. We do not have to perpetuate the analytical, anatomical inaccuracies of others, but we do need to deal with the presence of these other scientists and their results. They will stop only when natural science has been fructified by spiritual science to some extent. So let us try it. Spiritual science will clarify the intimate relationship between the process in the eye, EYE, and the processes in smelling and tasting, especially tasting, between the extension of the taste buds into the rest of the material organ of taste, and the spreading of the optic nerve in the eye. This is such a close connection that it is almost impossible to avoid looking for analogies in the tasting process when we characterize the inner aspects of the process of seeing. Of course, the extension of the taste buds into the material organ of tasting is not linked to anything as elaborate as the structure of the eye, which is interposed in front of the extension of the optic nerve, thus making seeing something completely different. But the visual process that begins behind the elaborate structure of the physical eye is inwardly very closely related to the process of tasting. I might say that in seeing, we carry out metamorphosed tasting. Metamorphosed in the sense that whatever happens as a result of the eye's elaborate structure is interposed in front of organ processes similar to those that take place during tasting. With regard to each different sense, of course, we must distinguish between what our organism presents to the outer world and what the outer world brings to meet our organism. We must look, for example, at the internal but outward directed activity that results from blood streaming into the eye, that is, from the organism as a whole working into the eye. This activity is even more pronounced in certain animals, whose eyes include, in addition to the structures in the human eye, structures such as the pectin and the xiphoid cartilage. Blood organs that allow the capital eye to be driven into the eyeball to a greater extent, while in humans the capital eye withdraws, leaving the eyeball inwardly free. Footnote. Pectin, P-E-C-T-E-N, resembling a comb, is a folded, vascular, pigmented membrane that projects into the vitreous humor of the eye of a bird or reptile. Xiphoid or xiphoid cartilage or process is the posterior and lowest division of the human sternum, remaining somewhat cartilaginous throughout life. End of footnote. The entire organization, the whole organism, works via the blood through the eye, EYE, into the sensory process. And in the visual process, the act of tasting is metamorphosed in such a way that we can call seeing a metamorphosis of tasting. For this reason, we should place seeing as a metamorphosis of tasting above tasting and smelling, again referring to the drawing back a couple of pages. Thus both the process of tasting and that of seeing consist of an outer factor working together with an inner one. The process must simply metamorphose upward, as it were. The visual process is a metamorphosis of the tasting process. There must also be a corresponding lower metamorphosis of this tasting process deeper inside the body. In the visual process, we ascend toward the outer world. The eye is enclosed only in its bony socket. We meet the outer world there, because the eye is a surface organ, and the activity of seeing is organized with reference to an outer factor. In the opposite direction, we must now think our way deeper into the body, into the lower metamorphosis of the tasting process. Here we arrive at sight's opposite pole, or counterpart, in the organism. This is a topic that will shed a tremendous amount of light on our subsequent considerations. What do we find when we trace the downward metamorphosis of the tasting process? This is where digestion comes about, and you will arrive at a true inner understanding of digestion only if you conceive of sight as a metamorphosed extension of tasting in one direction, and of digestion as its extension in the other direction. You must be able to grasp digestion as the complete and polar opposite of externalized seeing, because externalized seeing leads you to recognize digestion's counterpart in the outer world, the outer factor whose organic internalization is digestion. Similarly, you also become aware of how the digestive process must be thought of as related to the tasting process. You simply cannot understand the subtle, localized digestive activities in the human organism if you do not conceive of good digestion as being based on the ability to, quote-unquote, taste with the entire digestive tract, and bad digestion on the inability to do so. The process we have considered here separates into two, tasting and smelling. The activity of tasting relates more to the interaction of the etheric and the physical, that of smelling to the etheric's connection to the astral. What we recognized as tasting's continuation in the organism is subjected to the same division when we look first at digestion which leads to fecal elimination via the intestines, and then at excretion via the kidneys, which leads to urination. There are exact correspondences between elimination via the bowels and urination in the lower human being, and tasting and smelling in the upper human being. The results of separating tasting from smelling and ordinary digestion from everything involved in the more subtle workings of the kidneys are like counterparts in a polarity. At this point, it becomes possible to see events in the organism enclosed within the skin as the internalization of something external. In everything that has an upward continuation, we approach and open up to what is outside. We must now pursue this matter further in order to recognize our mental activity that is bound to the body. And I mean this not in the materialistic sense, but in another sense that will be familiar to you from my lectures, as a metamorphosis of seeing, again transposed inward. Let me read that without the parenthesis. I'm going to read that again. We must now pursue this matter further in order to recognize our mental activity that is bound to the body as a metamorphosis of seeing, again transposed inward. We must think of the organs that form the basis for thinking or conceptualization, again referring back to the drawing a few pages ago, that is, the structures in the interior of the human head, as organs of sight that have metamorphosed in a specific direction. Please consider the fact that most ideas are simply extensions of visual representations that live in your thinking. You need only compare this condition to the inner life of a person who is congenitally blind. Thinking is the inner extension of seeing. We come to realize that this also sheds light on the strange interaction that takes place between the anatomy of the head and brain and the activity of thinking. Strangely enough, for example, if we tackle our thought processes, and this, by the way, would be a very nice chapter for a medical dissertation, and investigate the connection between associative thinking and the brain's organization, we discover structures in the brain that resemble transformations of the olfactory nerve. We might say that seen from within, dispersed, analytical thinking is very similar to its counterpart in seeing. But from this same inner, organic perspective, summarizing what we have seen and relating ideas to each other, are activities very similar to smelling. In a very remarkable way, this similarity is even expressed in the brain's anatomical structure. In any case, pursuing this sequence of senses in one direction leads us to the thinking or conceptualizing process. Where do we arrive if we again look for the inner activity? From the perspective of seeing, ideation or ideation is seeing's inner reflection, the attempt to reverse the seeing process and guide it back to the organism. Its polar opposite, therefore, will attempt to lead the existing process outward rather than inward. This is digestion, which becomes the counter-image of conceptual activity because it leads to excretion. Again, see the prior drawing. Here, from a different, more intimate standpoint, you can see another example of what I showed you a few days ago by means of comparative anatomy, that the very structure of the human being, and specifically the appearance of intestinal flora, suggest a close relationship between the human being's so-called spiritual capacities and the regulated or unregulated human process of excretion. This is the same thing, viewed from a different perspective. Just as we see the activity of thinking as an inner extension of the process of seeing, we also see elimination as an outer extension of the digestive process. Getting back to our earlier observations, that becoming aromatic is a restrained combustion process, and solidification a restrained salt-forming process in plants, we will have shed light on what is happening here on the inside. We must simply be clear that a reversal is taking place. Up above is a reversal of seeing in an inward direction. Down below is a reversal in the direction of externalization. Thus, in the upper region, we acknowledge the relationship of these processes to salt formation, and in the lower region, we recognize their relationship to the development of fire, to combustion. See prior drawing. You help the lower body when something associated with aroma and the restrained combustion process in plants is guided into the lower part of the body. Similarly, you aid the processes of the upper region if the agent responsible for restraining or internalizing the salt process in plants is introduced into the upper part of the human being. This then must be implemented in detail. Here you can see how everything outside can be reflected on the inside. And the deeper we go within the human being, the more we must look for internalized outer factors. In the activities taking place in the digestive organs, and particularly in the kidneys, we must look for something that is very, very closely related to the aromatic combustion process, but is simply its other pole. And in the activities that begin in the lungs and move upward to the larynx and the head, we must look for something that is inwardly related to everything that tends toward salt formation in both plants and human beings. You might say, no, you actually can say, that if you know how the different plant species accumulate salts, you need only look for correspondences in the human organization. We have looked for this correspondence on the grand scale today, and we will look for detailed correspondences in the lectures to come. These descriptions, then, encompass all the basic principles of phytotherapy. Its basis becomes apparent. I might say that the entire process that takes place in the interaction between inner and outer becomes apparent. You have also seen several specialized aspects. Now consider the odors that tend more toward tastes, such that you discover the plant's true smell only by chewing it. That is, you actually perceive a synthesis of taste and smell, as is the case with lemon balm or ground ivy, called Glechoma heteracea. You find that a substance inherent in these plants tends toward salt formation. The processes of salt formation and aromatization are working together. This suggests that the organs related to plants, such as lemon balm, must lie closer to the outside, near the chest, while the organs related to strongly fragrant plants, such as the linden or the rose, must lie deep within the abdomen, or at least closer to the abdomen. From the perspective of the relevant organs, you find another process introduced into the upper body, among the organs that belong to smelling or tasting. In a somewhat more profound sense, this is an important life process for the human being. Respiration, which interposes itself here, see the prior drawing. We also look for its polar opposite, which must be an activity that separates from the digestive process, inasmuch as digestion leads to excretion and is the polar opposite of the organic activity of conceptualization. Something must separate off that is located close to the organs of digestion, just as respiration is located near the organs of smelling or tasting. The process in question is everything that is involved in the formation of lymph and blood, or to put it more precisely, everything that is pushed inward by the digestive system and thus has its seat in the lymph glands and so forth, in all the organs that play a part in blood formation. Here you see two polar processes, one separated off from digestion, the other, respiration, separated off from the more externally located sensory activities. Respiration is located behind the sensory processes. Mental representations are nourishment for the soul, and the respiratory process is inserted in between. The blood and lymph-forming process is inserted in front of digestion, inasmuch as digestion leads to elimination. Strangely enough, we are moving from the process itself into the entire human being, while it is customary today to consider the human being only from the point of view of the organs in question. Here we are attempting to understand the entire human being from the perspective of the relevant process and of the connection between the human being and the non-human outer world. And in fact, we have discovered connections that provide us with a direct image of all the etheric activity in the human being. This is what we have been studying for the past hour today. These two processes, respiration and blood formation, meet up again in the human heart. You see, we encounter the entire outer world, including the external aspect of the human being, as a duality that is held back in the human heart, where it attempts to achieve a balance of sorts. Thus we can arrive at a remarkable image that contrasts the synthesizing process in the human heart with its inwardness and its activity of gathering the substances and forces that enter the body from outside and move toward the perimeter of the body, and the analyzing process in the outer world, where everything that gathers in the heart is dispersed throughout. Here we come to a very important idea. It can be expressed in this way. We look out into the world and see the periphery, and wonder what is working into us from out there. How do we find a correspondence within ourselves, something related and similar in character to the contents of the outer world? By looking into our own heart. The reversed heavens are there, the polar opposite, as it were, of the heavens. In the outer world you have the periphery, the point expanded into infinity, and in the human heart you have the circle gathered together with the entire world within it. To use a crude image, we can simply imagine a human being standing on a mountain top and looking out into the great expanse of the universe. Then we imagine a tiny dwarf inside the human heart and try to visualize what that little dwarf sees as the reversal and synthesis of the image of the whole universe. This may be a mere symbolic representation, an imagination of sorts, but if we take it in the right way, it is also a legitimate guiding image that can function as a regulatory principle and can stimulate us to correctly sum up the details we have recognized. By now I have laid most of the foundations, both for our more specialized studies and for detailed answers to the many different questions that have been raised. The end of Lecture 8.